I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Wood Talk. Now here are three guys who, if combined, would make one hell of a woodworker. Mark, Shannon, and Matt.
What's happening, everybody? It's show number 548, and on today's show, we're talking about Norm Abram, the YouTuber. Why Matt's so small and shy, yet confident. Features.
What?
You didn't see that one coming?
I don't read these things, apparently.
Oh, wow. Definitely going to be a lot of woodworking in this show, I can already tell.
It's like Matt's medieval name. Where? Like, Matt, the small and shy, yet confident. Features of an all-in-one workbench and organizing portable power tools. But before we get to that...
No. Let's just make it all about me and Norm.
Okay, YouTuber. That sounds good. We can do a lot with that.
Not like the other.
Oh my god. Well, Wood Talk is brought to you by Rockler. Rockler has been helping customers create with confidence for over 65 years. Rockler's giving away a $250 gift card to one lucky Wood Talk listener. Enter for your chance to win before March 31st at rockler.com/woodtalk.
And if you want to help support the show, you can do so by going to patreon.com/woodtalk and signing up to become a patron of the show. Ooh. We'd like to thank Eric Lewis, Edwin Mancini, Doug, and Von Welch.
All right. Well, thanks for the support, everybody. We appreciate it. We've got a dining table discussion today. This one is spurred on by a question from a gentleman named Peter, and it goes like this. He says, like many, I've been binging the New Yankee Workshop episodes as they're uploaded to YouTube, and it seems lucky that Norm wasn't a YouTuber. The episodes are being uploaded out of order, and in early shows, he often ignores wood movement, uses exposed nails everywhere, and even a pocket hole jig that he calls a blind screw pocket. What a moron that guy is.
What a moron. All right.
Jeez.
And that belt sander that he puts that thing through its paces. Most of these would be a certain woodworking, YouTube woodworking sins by today's standards. And yes, Norm had his safety glasses on, but respirators, dust collection, hearing protection? Nope. All right, continuing. But later, boy, did Norm get into the, I could build that too if I had all those tools situation. Is there a dovetail jig that he didn't use? I even see a wide belt sander in a later episodes. I remember as a teenager in this era being in awe of all that he had and wondering why my high school shop didn't. And he did finally begin to address those wood movement issues. Didn't Norm love that biscuit joiner too? Anytime he could, out that thing comes. So I'm curious how we take these. Are they only good for the nostalgia? Why don't we see belt sanders featured anymore? Was the biscuit, well, how about the radial arm saw? There's another one that you don't see much, but you saw it always on New Yankee. Was the biscuit joiner so bad that the domino had to take over? I see some techniques. I wonder if I might try, but I wonder if I'm only seeing them there because we know better now. Now, that was kind of interesting because, I mean, we all know that woodworking, really, when you get down to it, hasn't changed that much. You know, in the last, 30 years,
there have been some... We're just more pretentious now.
absolutely.
3,000 years.
Yeah, right? I mean, seriously, I don't think there's anything that Norm did that you could just totally write off as, oh, well, we're so much smarter than we were back then. It's all decent techniques. It's just that at a different level, at a different time, when it wasn't as easy to get that feedback. You know, I often wonder that.
Why is the biscuit joiner like so bad now? Like, what happened? Did somebody have a bad experience with the biscuit joiner?
It's the same thing as pocket screws, though. Pocket screws have always been kind of that redheaded stepchild.
Well, at least, you know, there's the metal fastener snobbery that comes with all quote fine woodworking. So at least I can see that, whereas it's a screw still, but like
it's fast.
You know, how is a biscuit any different than a domino?
Anything that's fast. And see, the thing is, though, there's a point. You could always fault biscuits because they didn't have much in the way of depth, right? You could always say they're not very deep. They can't be that strong. But here comes the domino.
If you use 30 of them.
That's true. I mean, in casework, maybe you can get away with it, you know, but here comes the domino, which is as fast as the biscuit joiner, but now it's actually, you know, you got some depth to the joints. So that's the reason why I think the domino has taken off and doesn't get that same criticism, though it did in the beginning. It was just a really expensive biscuit joiner in the beginning, and I got plenty of crap for showing it on YouTube. But since then, a lot of these people who came along who don't really, I guess, care as much about the feedback as I did in the beginning, they're like, screw it. This is a great tool. I'm going to use this as much as possible. And that's why I don't think it gets the same kind of hate, because it's quick, but it's actually good. It's actually pretty effective as a joinery tool, whereas some of these other ones are generally considered not as strong or not as good. So I can't even imagine, and actually, I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing. I mean, getting the constant feedback definitely is a double-edged sword, and the whole concept of comments on any piece of content you make, also double-edged sword. But I think about how different things were back then. If you watched him do something that you had a problem with, and what would you do? You would write a letter to WGBH. You'd be like, I'm sending my tote bag back. Screw you guys.
Would you? And that sounds like a lot more effort.
You don't look, the same people who do the low effort comments these days are the same personalities that would have picked up a pen and a paper and wrote a letter.
Like, I don't know. I think that would be too much work for them. I think because it's so much more accessible and easy to write down some crap comment to me. Rather than the people who get mad at me.
The ones who get mad at you for not embedding the link. And making them have to go look it up themselves. Yeah, I'm with Matt on this one. I'm thinking maybe the effort to pull out a pen and paper.
Even
and
if
find
you embed
a stamp
the link, they're not even going to check. They're still going to ask you for it.
Yeah. I think they are still there. I think it's just a much smaller number. I'm sure they got plenty of mail from people who did not like what they saw, especially later, because I used to see that sentiment all the time in the forums. They had to have been, you know, someone must have been seeing the jokes that would happen in the forums about Norm just having tons of tools. And I could do that too if I had those tools, especially once I got that big old wide belt sander in there too. But it is interesting. Like, I do watch what he's doing and go, yeah, I mean, I learned a lot by posting stuff and seeing how people react to it. And then I would, over the years, adjust what I do, maybe change something. Oh, well, that didn't go over well. Maybe I don't show that anymore. And it was, you know, not just in terms of presentation, but just, you know, safety things that I became aware of. And it's like, he didn't have that benefit. It was him doing his best. And he had probably his circle of people there who might be able to say, hey, should you do it that way? Maybe you should do this. I would love to know how that creative process even took place. But it is a little bit weird seeing the product of that creative process in today's environment on YouTube. It is a little bit different. I almost said shocking. It's not really shocking. It's just very different because it's the same stuff, but done in a very different way.
It's interesting because, like, to me, it's like, well, Norm is a different generation of woodworker. Mm-hmm. And there's so many things that shape that generation. But I know a lot of guys like Norm Abrams, you know, a lot of professional contractors and things that's how they build. And frankly, I just think the latest generation, and I include myself in that, we've just become snobs about it because we have so much information at our fingertips. We can afford to, like, weigh all these different approaches and, you know, join a camp, basically join a tribe, you know, and we're going to use this method, you know, and he uses the example of, is there a dovetail Jake he didn't use, you know, if dovetail jigs were still a super, super popular thing, I'm sure there would be the Lee camp and there'd be the Rockler camp and mm-hmm. then the some, you know, whatever. That's the only two dovetail jigs I can think of right now. But Amana made one, didn't they? Whatever. I'm sure that there would be that, you know, everybody would have their version and why that version is better. And I think you see that today in some forums. But to me, Norm is just iconic, you know?
Yeah.
And see, this is going to sound snobby, and it probably is because I'm part of that snobby generation. But like David Marks is a fine woodworker. Mm-hmm. Norm is a good woodworker, but I think of Norm as a contractor.
Yeah.
And you know, it's terrible that that's like a hierarchy, you know, contractor is lesser than a fine woodworker. I mean, that's just wrong to actually put it that way. But you know what I mean, right? When I say Norm's like a home.
Yeah, Norm was a carpenter, you know, and he turned those skills into building furniture. And there are differences. I know some installers and people who were in the carpentry trade. They do things very differently. It's not that it's not as skilled. It's a different skill set. Things that would drive me nuts to get them
a lot
perfect.
Of speed. I mean, brad nailer is like your third hand in everything.
It's speed and there's practicality to it, and a lot of fine woodworking is anything but that. It's slow and impractical in a lot of cases.
Not forget as well, this is the age of television, and television was fueled by ad sponsors. And Delta was a sponsor, you know, so of course Norm had all these great tools. Who else was the sponsor? Was it Woodcraft? No, that was Scott Phillips.
Taibond? Wasn't Taibond a sponsor in New Yankee for a while?
Probably, yeah. I just remember Delta was like the sponsor for years and years and years.
Porter Cable.
You know, so he had to use those tools. I'm sure that was in the contract somewhere. And the entire show was funded by those sponsors.
Yeah.
YouTube is not. You know, it's ad revenue, you know, and that has nothing to do with what's on the show.
It's different though, because we have a similar thing. So I asked a question about CNC in a recent video, if anyone had suggestions for brands. And it's interesting because I don't watch anybody else. So I don't know when people are like, oh, just don't get this brand, because if I get another friggin' influencer shoving brand, whatever down my throat, I'm done with that. Like, I keep hearing this a lot about like, oh, what was it? I made a tabletop, right? And they're like, kudos for not using your CNC or some goofy slab flattening jig, you know, that it just, there's a lot of these tools and things. Think about how much woodpeckers stuff there is.
Slab flattening jig is out of vogue now. Huh?
Yeah, it is. Apparently. No, it's in, but it's angered someone because they've seen it too much. And everybody's got one, you know? So same thing with like woodpecker stuff, right? Woodpecker stuff is, it's all over the place. And I think there's definitely something weird happening where it's not always necessarily sponsored, but there are now like brand darlings that have made their way in, and then people show it and then they watch it and they go, well, I gotta have that too, right? Like I want to be what that guy is or that gal is. I should go get the same stuff, and they go get it. And then we just have things that we don't necessarily need. And I don't know. It's interesting to see.
Yeah. I think that at the core of it is what Mark said, like there was no feedback. You know, other than the small production staff. And I think Norm would be the first person to say, thank God I'm not a YouTuber. He'd be like, hell no, I'm not going to do that. You know, I wondered the same thing about Roy Underhill to some
degree. I was just going
to
bring him up. Mm-hmm. When did Roy, he start?
1979.
82? October 6th, 1979.
Was it 79?
First episode date.
And the difference with Roy, of course, is he was, you know, I mean, episode one was about subversive woodworking is what he called it. And it was completely anti-brand. You know, he was using all antique tools and things like that. He was the polar opposite of Norm.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the reasons that there was success there is because there was that foil provided against Norm. But some of the stuff that Roy did in his shop was just downright unsafe.
Yeah.
You know, and you look at every episode, blood was drawn, you know, the speed with which he worked and things was just nuts. And I mean, I have the utmost respect for Roy as a performer, let alone a woodworker. The stuff he was able to do in 22 and a half minutes every single week was just shocking. And watching him prepare for shows, when I went down to his school, he was prepping for a show at the bench next to me. And the amount of work that went into being able to do one shot for 22 and a half minutes and build a piece of furniture.
Heck yeah.
Whereas Norm and David Marks, you know, they were building a piece of furniture over weeks. with multiple craftspeople sometimes in David's case.
I just get it done. The one correction there though, from what I understand, Norm did that build in a couple of days. Like the prototype. Yeah.
He would do it in 22 and a half minutes.
He would do it in a weekend. Still though, the stuff that he would build in a weekend is pretty damn impressive.
Heck yeah.
Well, and then the other thing too, did you know that the Woodwright shop predates the New Yankee Workshop by 10 years?
No,
1979 versus 1989 as the start of New Yankee
started earlier than that. That's interesting.
I mean, if I'm just looking on IMDb here, but the 10 years before I was, look, a lot of people think of me as the old guy in this area, right? Or one That's of the me. Older guys. I was 2 years old when this show came out, The Woodwright Shop in 1979. That's nuts. Okay, well, that's
little baby cool. Mark, so little, so cute,
little baby Mark. Yeah, I mean, this is interesting to think about too, because these guys are doing this as pioneers, and there was nothing like it. I mean, look at the Woodwright Shop is interesting because it's a completely different format, and I don't think anything has been like that since. I think that's a one of a kind thing. You look at the New Yankee Workshop. And I'd be lying if I didn't say that that was exactly what I thought of when I started making shows in 2006 and putting them on online. I wanted to do an internet version of the thing I love to watch, and that was Woodworks and New Yankee Workshop. And that was the format that I went with. And really, while everybody has their own version of like, how are we going to narrate through this? How are we going to do jokes? There's different presentation styles. But ultimately, he set the bar with that show. And it's just interesting because they had nothing... Maybe there were things in other genres that they could use as models, but there was really nothing in the world of woodworking like that at that time, at least that I know of.
What will be interesting to see is if now that those shows, those episodes are more accessible, you know, as they're releasing them to the wider woodworking world, you know, literally dropping, you know, mid to late 80s into 2023.
Yeah.
How will that influence? Like, are we going to see a resurgent in biscuit joiner and like brad nailers? We're going to see wide belt sanders because we're in this age of like big tools in people's shops, right?
Yeah.
How many wide belt sanders are going to start showing up in people's shops because Norm had one?
Well, you see, Peter's asking these questions. I think these are legitimate questions. Like, are we sleeping on really good tools that might have helped just because they've fallen out of favor? Not that they're a bad tool, but something about them has fallen out of favor. I think the dovetail jig is an interesting one. I remember I don't know how many conversations we would have in forums about various dovetail jigs, and someone would come out with a new dovetail jig. Oh my God, it's so cool. It does this and you can move the little fingers and it's like amazing. Nobody talks about dovetail jigs anymore. Isn't that weird? Or is it just me, or you've guys seen that too?
No. In my woodworking lifetime, which is less than 20 years at this point, you know, we're getting close to 20 years, but it's less than 20 years that I've been woodworking, and hand-cut dovetails were not a thing when I started woodworking.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say they're not a thing. Somebody out there
Some wacko would do it.
Roy was doing it. But nobody, you know, was talking about this. And in order to cut dovetails, you had to have a dovetail jig.
Yeah.
It was the only way that it could be done. So, yeah, it's crazy. Now, I think it's gone the other way. I think most people, you know, hand-cut them or use, like, you know, maybe they use a bandsaw for part of it, but, like, the chisels come out and everything. Like. Yeah. I don't know anybody using a jig anymore.
Or dovetails just have also fallen out of favor.
Yeah, that's true.
If you see somebody
killed them.
Yeah, if you're doing a whole bunch of dovetails, it does make sense to use a dovetail jig. That's why they were invented. Makes total sense, but I don't see many dovetails. And the people who are doing dovetails are usually pushing toward that hand cut style. I don't know. So weird. But it is fun to watch. Watch what he does. Watch how he uses the radial arm saw. Which was a very popular tool in the 80s that has really fallen out of favor these days. It's great nostalgia. He's got great jokes and stuff. I found a couple of things that I was like, whoa, how'd that get past the censor? Like, this is PBS. Oh, yeah. And this is like
OG.
That's like a Mark joke right there. What is going on? Way to go, Norm. Well, if you guys haven't seen it, we've been talking about it. It's great. Go to YouTube, check out the channel. The nostalgia stuff, like, it really hits hard. It's super fun to watch. And it's just a very cool thing. You'll even see some new videos with Norm showing up there to promote the new channel, which is very cool to see too. All right. Well, thanks for that question, Peter. Appreciate it. And we're going to do an ad thing. Speaking of sponsors and all that fun stuff. Oh boy. We're going to talk about
the Festival Dominoes.
We're going to talk about another brand, another big brand that takes over YouTube.
You can't do that.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it right now. You watch me.
I'm sitting here. I'm
Festool,
watching.
Baby. Festool.
Festool.
Love them or hate them. Festool makes some great stuff.
What is that?
Well, let me tell you. Actually, I can't tell you. I can tell you that Rockler carries them, though.
I'll tell you.
Thanks for asking, Matt.
Great question, Matt.
Very timely. Did you guys know that Rockler carries a wide selection of Festool products in store and online, including Festool Dominoes, we just talked about those, track saws, dust extractors, and much more, and is now a full-line dealer with an even broader selection. Rockler also lets you test drive your Festool purchases. Look, it's an expensive purchase. Having a test drive is quite a peace of mind. You get 1 month to try the tool. If you're not satisfied, there's a money-back guarantee. So you can see the full selection at rockler.com, and during the month of March, they're giving away a Festool Domino XL DF700. That's the big boy. The whole set. It's valued at $1,685. Enter for your chance to win at rockler.com. So now you got two giveaways you can enter. The $250 gift card, and then which will probably get you like a Festool power cord. And and you can go get the Domino XL.
You're not wrong. I had to replace a Festool power cord once. It was a big deal.
Or maybe like a dust fitting for the end of the hose.
Yeah.
Also in that price range.
Yeah.
So you're saying I could go and buy a Festool Domino, and then when I get like run off YouTube for showing up with that on the channel, I could return it.
Yeah, you could. It seems that way. Nice. I mean, let's not abuse the privilege. This is like the Costco thing where people bring go get a TV for the Super Bowl and then bring it back. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Like legitimate reason to return it. Go ahead and return it.
Buy that fancy prom dress and wear it once and take it back.
That's what I did.
Yeah. Me too.
All right. Well, that is awesome. Good to
Puffy
know.
Shoulders and everything.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
Go check it out. So, hey, like back with the previous conversation, that is interesting to see too, is like changes in brands like Festool. Now, one change I've noticed is Festool's really kind of like embraced the influencer environment. And I think they just had a show recently. Like, I can't remember exactly what it was, but I'm not going to name names, but someone who was there told me, who has been with Festool as a brand for quite a long time, and they said it was such a dramatic difference from past events where this was definitely focused on influencers. And it was full of a lot of DIY focused channels who, like, if you just think about Festool's history, most of the time, while ding dongs like me would get some Festool stuff, their real bread and butter were the high end mobile pros, right? Like that, that was their target market. The people who would go see a Gary Katz, live event, you know, where he's talking about how to do, you know, really high-end trim carpentry and stuff like that. That was the bread and butter. The internet weirdos like me, that was actually one of the reasons why when I had a sponsorship with them, that came to an end, was because they wanted to refocus their attention on the pro market. And I was talking to a different audience. Uh-huh. And this guy was saying, having seen that transition, how different it looked this time, with everything was about Instagram and people taking selfies of themselves using the tools. It was a totally different vibe. And he was like, I felt real uncomfortable about it. Actually, yeah, it was a whole thing. So I actually got that info secondhand, but on good authority. So yeah, that's interesting. I don't know. Thought I'd bring it up because everything changes. Okay. Should we get to some questions?
Yeah.
Sure. Matt, got a good one for you, buddy.
Oh, it's for
this
me.
This is all for you. Yeah, I'm going to read it though.
Okay.
John wrote in. Subject is Matt. Question is, Matt seems like a little shy guy. Like the shy guys in Mario. Is that what that is?
Oh, yes. Yes.
The little guys that wear the mask, yes. Right?
Uh-huh.
Okay, Matt seems like a little shy guy. How did he find his confidence for videos and podcasting?
It's pretty easy. I'm just talking to myself.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
Yeah.
It seems like it's a big thing.
Talking to a lens.
But it's,
yeah, and you're only talking to two people here. So,
and this is a newer thing for me in reality. I've only been doing this for about 5 years, six years. I don't know how long it's been.
I'm just talking to the little green light on my laptop. I'm not talking to you guys.
You don't even see us.
There's no one here in this room with me. I'm all alone, I think.
I had a double check behind me. Well, I mean, did you feel a certain, like when you first started, I don't remember your early stuff to know.
Oh, it's bad.
So did you have, well, here's
one
the
thing we can all say with confidence. I think your early stuff, oh, it's bad.
I know Matt. I've hung out with Matt. We spent a lot of time together. I don't know that I would call Matt necessarily a shy guy. He's just not necessarily the guy who's going to be the loudest person in the room, but I wouldn't necessarily call him shy. He just kind of keeps to himself for the most part, but not due to being shy, just due to being, if I don't have something to say, I'm not going to say it kind of person.
That's fair.
You know, so I'm curious, like, would you agree with this assessment of you being a shy person?
I think I was shyer when I was younger.
Yeah.
I've definitely kind of outgrown that as I've aged and I realized that I don't care what people think of me, whatever.
Yeah. That's good though.
As I've kind of grown into adulthood and realized, you know, it doesn't matter as much, like whatever. I don't know. And I'm definitely introverted, like for real. And, I don't know. You can go back and you can see my original stuff. My original videos are bad not because I was like shy, but because I didn't know how to compose myself in front of a camera or talk to no one there.
Yeah. You were developing your style, your presentation style.
Yes. And then you can actually in the first few videos, or at least the first few months of me doing videos, you can see this noticeable change where the camera actually becomes like secondary to
your best friend
to the speech, I guess. Thank you, Shannon. That's great.
A lover.
Yes. Oh, so nice.
Oh, hello.
But I went from like not being able to talk and compose and like feel the comfort level of the camera being there kind of went away and it's kind of faded into the background. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, this seems a lot more like a natural presentation than this forced, awkward thing that this guy is trying to do. But that's why I started making videos originally, was to get better at speaking anyway, and just get better at presenting and better at forming thoughts and just sharing ideas. And you can tell in the beginning, I'm not good at it at all.
Yeah,
I'm still not that great at it, but I'm getting like every year, it just gets a little better.
You try really hard, and that's what we love.
I try really hard. The other thing too that I'll mention about this as well, it's not so much on this because there's no editing. This is as much like the live show I do with Lindsay, where it's just like straight, like mental.
Yeah. What'd you say goes out in the recording?
I can make myself sound a lot more well-spoken in an edit. Like,
yeah,
most of the time it's very well cut together. So it sounds all like seamless and uniform. Like I had that full thought all at once, but I didn't.
Yeah. That's good. Well, you know, jump cuts are very forgiving on YouTube. So,
well, there's very lots of ways to hide them now. I'm a cinematographer, so I use more than one camera now. So,
of course, you do. Sure, you got drones.
Especially, you have 24 cameras.
It's very easy to jump.
Always
got to
just B-roll shot
and cover things up, or throw some action shot on top of the cut. You'll never know it was a cut there.
A single multicam sequence for Matt is about 7.8 terabytes in Premiere. All 24 4K cameras rolling.
Well, I just added a 360 camera to my lineup, so that should make things even more.
Seriously? Is that back again? That seems like a phase that died.
It's actually quite nice because you can reframe and compose and pan in post.
Dang. That's wild. Sure, does it look like crap though?
Then you have to.
It's a full 1080.
You got to show me. I want to see some
image and you can, sure. They're on, I put show a couple me. On my social
send
media.
Send me
already.
Some clips. Okay.
I said the same thing about the wider aspect of like action cams. Like I would specifically shoot at the higher res because I had so many more pixels to play with. Mm-hmm. So you could crop and pan. And I was like, yeah, this is great. And then I just got so tired of having to do it.
Yes.
you can, but then you have to.
I've gotten to the point of doing it enough now where I'm kind of, I definitely shoot more for the edit. So I'm not going to be like shooting all this stuff to then throw away. So with the 360 cam, I'm like, I have it in the shop. So I'm like, the last video I just shot was like processing lumber. So I have the 360 camera there in the shop with another camera anyway, so I can cut between them. But that allows me to like, oh, I'm at the jointer, but now I'm going to walk over to the planer. The camera can now follow me and show that like I'm walking over here now. And then I have a camera that's facing the planer I can cut to. So I can play around with it. Like someone's there in the shop. It's like having a camera person without having a camera.
I was going to say, the lengths we'll go to avoid working with someone.
You're right. So is it just like a giant disco ball that just hangs in the middle of the shop?
You can put it wherever you want. And the cool thing about it is it stitches out the stick that it's on. So you can't see the mounting point.
Mm-hmm.
So like you can put it like anywhere you want and you'll never see the mount if you're looking straight down.
Do you guys think if we took like a survey?
Matches Schwarz 3D 360 cameras. You watch.
If we took photo. If you took a survey of creators, do you think a lot of them are introverts? Because
yes.
I would say 100% yes. Oh, yeah. Let you know that I am an introvert. Like
heck yeah.
I try not to appear standoffish, and it's nothing against other people, but it really stresses me out anytime I have to do something.
The wrong address when they want to come by your house.
I send them to my mom's house. Yeah.
That's not standoffish.
I jump through every hoop I can to not
that's deal with people. That's standoffish.
But it's not. It's an introverted personality trait. I've always been introverted. I was very shy. I mean, people are saying Matt's a shy guy. I was absolutely shy. I was a little kid who was always hanging on my mom's leg. I didn't want to talk to anybody. I think to this day, we go out to dinner. I still make her order for me. I don't want to talk to the waiter.
Yeah, you're still hanging on a leg.
Yeah, I still got my hanging on my mom's leg. You know, that's what you do. But no, seriously, like I think a lot of us probably are introverted. And it's interesting too, because you go to an event like Workbench Con or whatever, and you very quickly find the introverts, right? And you can very quickly more quickly find the extroverts, because yeah, they're very obvious. It's the introverts, like Matt and I, who are like, I think there's a place with seafood down the road.
Let's go over there.
Do you think we can go over there and no one will notice? Like, well,
what's been interesting for my own like I don't know, personality or personal development is like, the more I've gotten into this stuff, like with the content creation, like having fans, let's say,
mm-hmm,
the one thing that's nice about it is that there's like this, the ice is already broken, because at least they already know who I am.
Yeah.
And there's at least, they know there's some talking point that we can talk about that.
Yeah.
It kind of gets rid of all that weird, who the hell are you and what do you do? And let me... So there's like this nice beginning point of the conversation, which helps me a lot as an introvert to be like, okay, I can actually like feel, I want to say like comfortable is not quite the right word, because it's not like I'm uncomfortable talking to people, yeah, but it just,
because generally the conversation starts with crotch.
Oh, so, yeah, definitely.
You never get comfortable there.
That helps a lot.
Crotch lover.
Just like walk up, say fellow crotch lover. Okay. I'm like, you're cool. You passed the cool test.
Is it a little bit like the live long and prosper, the symbol for like crotch that. Yes. People? Yeah,
there's a crotch right there.
Yeah. Use crotch, live long and prosper. I got you.
That.
There you go. Is that more accurate? Yeah, maybe that's the crotch symbol.
Yeah. What?
Couple branches.
Podcast.
Couple branches.
Bringing it back.
Yeah, you guys got to watch the video, because
we're doing fantastic. Vulcan and gang signs now.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Okay. Well, that's good.
I think we talked enough about that. But thank you.
I don't know either. It's all good.
Thanks, Matt's an extrovert. Asked this weird question.
Matt's out of his shell because people know who he is. That's the moral to that story.
There we go.
Okay, Matt, you actually got a question here.
What? Who?
Can you believe
picked
it?
A question from me. All right, here we go. It's
I did.
Warren. Oh, you picked it? Okay, great.
No, I didn't. I didn't put that there.
Oh.
Yeah, I did. Never mind.
Who put that there?
I was going to say, somebody did, because I didn't. Who put
it? It was totally me.
I didn't
even
put my own question in there. Mark just did the whole show.
I did all the show prep. Of course I did it. Never mind. Go ahead.
What the hell? Did I put that there? Do I not remember doing this?
I did it like an hour ago, and I don't remember
totally
doing it.
Totally happened. So. Okay. All right. There, question from Warren. All right. Workbench outfeed table hybrid. Okay, that's quite the words. All right. I primarily do power tool woodworking and metalworking, but I have been slowly getting into hand tool woodworking as I find deals here and there on hand tools. One of the biggest issues is I don't have a workbench that is conductive to work holding. My workshop is small, only 250 square feet. And while I dream of a large shop like Mark has, the housing market, I'm guessing it's supposed to be market says I'm stuck where I'm at. I currently have a small outfeed table that is 6 foot by 2.5 feet, and that is about all the space I have available for a workbench. In order to fit a workbench in my shop, I am going to have to make this bench do everything from hand tool woodworking, hand tool work holding assembly, and also function as an outfeed table. What are some eventual functions or features you would include in a workbench that has to do it all?
Matt's tired.
It's late.
Been a long day.
I mean, this
it is late.
I'm going to move
now.
There's
no bueno. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, this is actually kind of funny. Back to the original topic. Like, isn't that kind of what Norm did? Like, the dedicated workbench thing, I feel like, almost started with Schwarz. Like, because this is when I was starting woodworking, I had like a counter.
Mm-hmm. I did the same thing. I had like a work everything. Surface that wasn't really a good workbench, but it was a surface that was off the ground.
And I always thought the people who had like the real old school fancy workbench were just kind of weird, like super dedicated to what they were doing. But it wasn't for me.
Especially
man, the internet ruined everything.
Long ago, we're talking like 2007.
It really is interesting to document these changes just in sentiment and tool usage. Well, the reason I put this in there is just if we can kind of brainstorm for Lauren here, like what do we think in that kind of space? A classic workbench just may not be the best option for him. I mean, it's good for work holding and stuff, but it sounds like he does need.
I think it's like exactly what we're.
Yeah, I think he needs exactly or she is Lauren. I can't tell if that's is that a dude's name. Like, there's Lauren Michaels,
the spelling
right?
Makes me think it's a man, but yeah, I'm not really sure.
Like Lauren Michaels, right? Or is he Lauren? Hello,
it's Lauren, I think, but still,
L
O R E N. I feel like doesn't matter. It doesn't really matter.
You're tangenting it a little bit here.
There's a Lauren Gray who is spelled the same way, and it is a female.
All right. Well,
this really isn't important. It's not germane to the conversation.
The answer is the same.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter. But I think more of a utilitarian workbench, work holding device.
Thank you.
I think you need
some kind of like some way of mounting some kind of woodworking vice, like a face vice somewhere. Yeah. On there.
Is this a good candidate for like some of these T-track nightmares that we see all over the place?
I don't maybe, but like that's all like that's more surface clamping though, right?
T-track and a mix of dog holes. Get a nice little dog hole grid.
Or like, yeah, I mean, really, you can drill dog holes in any surface, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you want a little bit of thickness so that the holdfast has something to kink into, but you may not be using holdfast.
Well, how about this?
There's like, all kinds of hold down type thing.
Lauren didn't get into like what metalworking they're talking
that's
about.
Right. Woodworking and metalworking. That
like,
does complicate
are we welding?
Things.
Are we just like, I just wanted to drill some holes in some steel or like I just need to file a screw that I cut down or like the range of like what people call metalworking
and
is
wood
like.
Doesn't mix real well.
It doesn't. But are we just
metal
talking
filings
about like,
and hand
I just want to have like.
Really don't mix.
A basic metalworking bench vise on there too to hold metal screws so I can use a hacksaw to cut them shorter. Or we're talking mm-hmm. like, I want to fabricate and weld on this thing too. Or drill or grind.
Can you even do that? Like, is there even a world in which those can safely coexist?
I mean, safely, sure. But like conveniently, no.
Yeah. Because the metalworking thing screws it all up. I had answers, and now that you throw metalworking into it, I'm like, well,
I didn't throw it in. Lauren threw it in.
Yeah, but you reminded me. But
what do you
now,
want?
Like,
well, here's the exercise that I take people through when they're asking about like what vices do I put on my workbench, and I always say, what are your next 3 to 5 projects? Mm-hmm. You know, and maybe you don't know. You know, but what are like some things on your bucket list? Pick 3 to 5 projects. And just think about it. Like, how am I going to build it? What work holding would be good for this? How am I going to walk through this and build it? Am I going to cut this over in the table saw? Then maybe I need some outfeed support. So I want that outfeed table. I'm going to be hand cutting dovetails. So I'm going to want, you know, a face vise probably to hold the board. Or I'm, you know, screw that. I'm going to use a dovetail jig. So you need a blade to clamp it, you know, down to the bench top. If you can actually walk through a build or three, and I say more than one because obviously there's going to be differences from one to the other. Plan that out and there's your answer. And I think whether it's the next 3 to 5 or the next 15 to 20, you'll find that the answer is probably the same. Just because there's only so many ways to do this, right? There's only so many ways to hold something, to route something, to saw something. Yeah. I think the more specialized you get, the more you paint yourself into a corner.
Yeah, that's true. Okay.
I don't know.
Interesting question. I don't think we have a great answer. It's a challenging situation.
I think Shannon gave us the best answer.
I agree.
Think about it and figure it out for yourself. That's basically what he said.
Shannon's got it. He's more of like teach the man to fish kind of guy.
I'll condense it down for you there, Lauren.
That's always been my philosophy. I don't have answers, but I'm going to show you how to fish.
I'm going to show you how to find the answers. Let me Google that for you.
That's what I need to do. Yeah. I'm going to do a fly fishing podcast.
Oh,
that's
do it. Need. Do it.
There we go.
I won't listen, but do it.
I won't listen. I won't do it. Nice. All right. That's my first iTunes review is going to be awesome. It's going to be from listen. Mark. One star.
I didn't listen, but I love it.
It's a great idea.
I'm just okay. All right, Shannon. I think you got the last one.
This is from Anthony, whatever. He's organizing power tools. Like a lot of
that's
us,
a good question for
I
you.
Have quite a few portable power tools.
Good reason yeah. I gave you this one.
Who are you
to
talking
you?
To? Like a lot of us.
The way I assign my questions on the show as little jokes for myself.
That clearly. clearly.
This one actually kind of works for me. If I go back like 10 years.
Yeah.
So he says, I have quite a few portable power tools, routers and the like. While the Festool stuff comes in nice, neat adult Lego sustainers, most of them are in random sized blow molded cases. Some of them are in no case at all. There are quite a few ways to go about storing them, but do you guys have a cheap stackable method for the caseless stuff? So yeah, one of the first things I did when I got like a router or a biscuit joiner, because I had one, a DeWalt one, because that's what Norm told me to buy.
Mm-hmm.
I got rid of that blow molded case. Now I didn't get rid of it. I like shoved it in the cupboard under the stairs with Harry Potter because there was in the back of my mind, I was thinking if I ever sell this, I'd probably be able to sell it like more readily if I have the case. Like, you know, instead of just like, here's my biscuit joiner. But if I had the case that it came in, I would probably be able to sell it more. I don't know why I was thinking that, but I did hang on to them. But the first thing I did was take them out and like move that blow molded case somewhere else. And I had a whole bank of drawers in my shop that had like pull out trays. So like there was a drawer front, like a false front, and then just a real shallow tray on full extension slides behind it. And there was just a stack of them. And I built a little plywood cabinet that had all those in it. And then I put the whole thing on wheels so I could roll it around. But just the shallow tray was great for you. You could stand up routers. You could lay routers down on the side. You could put pin nailers in there. The biscuit joiner fit in there. It was just a real easy way to do all that. It was actually not until like Festool came on the scene that I started keeping those containers just because of the way they stacked on top of the extractor and that whole mobile professional that Mark was talking about earlier. Otherwise though, I mean like those blow molded cases didn't hold anything. Like it held the tool in like a French fit compartment, but like
a lot of air.
The router bits didn't fit there. You know, the wrench, the two wrenches that came with the Porter Cable router fit and that was it.
Right.
So, I immediately got rid of those things and just built a series of trays that worked. Was it the cheapest? Wasn't that bad. I mean, this is when plywood was still affordable. So it wasn't, you know, it was something that I screwed together. I didn't even use pocket screws. I just used screws right through the side. Damn. And full extension
savage,
slides from the depot.
Savage, man.
I know. Absolutely. But I mean, that worked for years. I eventually integrated that cabinet into like a miter saw station. So it stopped being mobile and permanently lived up against the wall. But it was great. I mean, I could store all kinds of tools in there and very quickly get to them.
Mm-hmm. My answer would be the same. Get rid of those damn cases. I think for a person working in a shop, if you're not hitting the road with your tools, those cases are probably the biggest waste of space you could probably incorporate. I've got an older video that I did quite a while ago on a tool case that I made. It's just basically like a cabinet for storing tools. And I kind of did a little comparison of the equivalent amount of space that those tools take up. And then when I shove them in little cubbies and on little shelves and inside, you know, little compartments, you can compress so many more tools into a space if you just get rid of those damn cases, even the Festool ones. And I say get rid of, I think what you were talking about, Shannon, totally valid. If you can hold on to them, hold on to them. It's going to help with resale value. If you do have to go on the road, you might want to use the case. But ultimately, complete waste of space. Get them out of there. If they're tools that you actually use, then make them more accessible. Put a bunch of them on a slide-out tray. You're going to be so happy with it. It's so much easier to get to the tools.
Seriously, I won't even like get a tool that's out on the other side of the shop, let alone like get it out of its case.
Right? That's just too much to ask.
Sheer sign. That maybe that's what happened to biscuit joiners. They were all in their blow molded cases.
Yeah.
And no and
everybody
one
threw them out.
Stopped using them.
Okay. Thanks. So what do you do for your stuff, Matt?
So I don't know when it was like 5 years ago, I kind of moved to this mindset of having the shop be only for things that are used on like a frequent basis or more constant basis.
That's where the drum sander left, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So the same thing with the like the portable power tool things. So in the old barn or the small barn or the horse barn or whatever, I've got those the plastic shelves, the assembled snap through the plastic shelf things. That's where I keep all the portable handheld power tools that I don't use on a frequent basis. And then the ones that I do use on a frequent basis, they're just kind of wherever they are in the shop. If it's like the orbital sander or like a router or whatever, those are all out in the shop. But if I want like my metal cutting circular saw out in the barn, like a hammer drill, barn, you know, like how often do I need, like once a year I walk up there, grab the tool and I put it away and it's out of my way. It's out of the shop. It's in its own little storage area. That's honestly, that's been like a huge help for me because I've people have like seen my shop, the old shop before I kind of got into that. And there was this crap everywhere because it was the shop was a workspace and a storage space. And I had way too much stuff in there, things I never used, things I never wanted to have in there, but I had to hold on to because whatever. And I started going down that road of like, okay, the shop is only, the only things in here are things that I actually need to use on a frequent basis or things that I'm using in that project for that, in that moment. If it doesn't fall into those categories, it needs to be in storage out of this room.
Yeah.
So I do the same thing with the handheld, even like pneumatic nailers. There's no pneumatic nailers in my shop. I don't use them.
Not using them all the time. Just an occasional thing.
Yeah, that's it. So they're in their they're actually in their blow mold cases. Those ones I keep in the cases because they're kind of smaller and a little more compact. Yeah, they're in the barn. You know, they're all together, just chilling in a old cabinet that was out there.
See,
that's mine are sitting next to my pancake compressor. Because why would I need a pneumatic nailer in my shop?
Why would you compress a pancake? They're already so smushed.
You shouldn't compress Matt's dog.
I make really fluffy pancakes. Can't compress my pancakes. They're flourless pancakes.
Incompressible. Gluten-free garbage wafers that no one wants to eat.
I'm a big fan of like if I don't use it all the time, it's not in my shop. I like elbow room. Like I was the same way. There was stuff everywhere, like vintage tools stacking up. And then I started discovering like specialty things, like, you know, wood turning. There's so many freaking jigs for my lathe. But if I, unless I'm turning, I don't need that stuff. So I stuck all of it in like one of those Rubbermaid containers and I stacked it next door in my laundry room. Like, so all of my marquetry stuff, all of my wood turning stuff, it's in its own case. And it's like, if I'm going to do marquetry, like I go and get the case and bring it into the shop. And when I'm done, I take it away. Yeah. It gives you so much more room. You feel so much more organized and like optimized because you're not tripping over stuff.
I feel like we've talked about this like a lot before, but just having that space, just not having to look at the clutter, to deal with the clutter and just being able to like walk. Like that's, I mean, that's for me, that's like, holy crap, this is great. I can actually walk around. I can move this camera around, kind of like not as much of a pain in the ass as it could be.
Yeah.
With stuff everywhere. Yeah. I'm kind of liking this.
Makes a big difference.
Yeah, nice. It's still evolving. I'm still working on it. But that's what the sandpaper thing I'm working on now is like, I gotta get this done because I never hung up the old one from the old shop.
Right.
I'm like, okay, well, and it's out of date because I built it when I used to use a 5-inch random orbit sanding pad. So I have all the cubbies for every grit of what do we call it? The whole page sandpaper and the 5-inch discs.
That's what we called it. But now they're all the wrong size, right?
So I'm like, I don't use that anymore. So I'm like, I can use that cubby for like something that I'd actually need by the bench.
Yeah.
I'm like, just make a whole new project, whatever.
Nice.
Yeah, see, and that's why the belt sander went out of form because those belts were too difficult to store. Couldn't make a decent sandpaper cubby for it.
That's a tricky tool too. Really, I can see why, like in the face of other sanders for fine woodworking, I can see why that one is not pulled out. I mean, I own one, just, but if I had a barn,
one step down from die grinder.
Yeah,
as far as a sculpting tool goes.
Let's just say if I had a barn
belt on that thing,
that's where I would keep that tool. It would be in my barn.
That's where mine is. Yeah. Actually, I have several. They're in the barn.
There's times, but it just doesn't come out that often. Okay, well, I think that's going to do it for us today. Family-owned since 1954, Rockler is your go-to source for high-quality and innovative woodworking tools, finishing supplies, hardware, lumber, and expert advice. Whether you're building a simple bookshelf, a custom desk, or new kitchen cabinets, Rockler has everything you need to make your next project a success. Visit rockler.com and use the code WOODTALK, that's all one word, to receive free shipping on most orders over $49. I missed my spot there, and I thought we had a winner to announce. Dang it. All right, when you're reading, I'm going to go look for the winner. And remember to head to rockler.com/woodtalk to enter for your chance to win a $250 gift card.
Hooray for that. I would be curious to hear from our audience. Go to woodtalkshow.com, fill out the form, or email at woodtalkshow@gmail.com. What are the things that we do and our generation of woodworkers do that we're all going to laugh and scoff at 20 years from now on whatever the 20 years in the future version of a podcast is?
We do stupid thumbnails.
Yeah. See, I'd be willing to bet that I've got some stuff that's old enough that people are already saying, what was he smoking? You know, what was he doing there? But I'd be really curious. I'd be willing to bet that there's stuff that current creators have done. Gosh, even those that have only been around a couple of years, you think about how much has changed in a couple of years. So yeah, let's hear from you. What are the things that we shouldn't be doing anymore that you've seen us do, that you saw Matt do in the first five episodes? I don't know why I'm throwing Matt under the bus right now.
Do it.
Because he's shy and he won't defend himself.
Spraying finish outside.
It's a recent revelation.
But yeah, let us know at those contact things. Up
there you
above.
Go.
And yeah. That's all I got. That's all I can install, Mark. Did you find it?
I did, yeah. The winner of the November through January gift card, $250, went to David Kunkel. David?
Yay, David.
Kunkel.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. And David,
if you
listen to the show.
Did you buy a power cord from Festool?
Go get your own power cord, dude. You're in the money. Seriously, David, if you listen to the show, let us know what you got. I think that's, you know, it's cool to announce the winners, but I also want to know what you guys are getting with that gift card. Let us know.
Heck yeah.
All right.
Was the store nice? Did they stop you and say, you're not going to buy that easily?
They're always nice. Yeah, that's what they do. When you're a Wood Talk fan, you walk in, they go, don't think you're slipping by. We know you're a Wood Talk listener. Come over here. Secret handshake.
Pull out the wooden paddle and
smack you in the butt.
Fraternity initiation.
There you go. All right. Well, thank you for listening, everybody, and we will catch you next time.
Thanks for, thanks for coming back. Two stars or not.
We'll come again. Two stars.
Come again.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.